سألوه حتى كورونا وايروس يوسف بري ذا اسكين هاو
دي فيو لا 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 جوانا دي فرا دي अरे कृष्ण बोल कर लो क्या कैसी काम चल रहा है ना इधर
हाँ
गुड गुड अब फिर गो ऑन फॉर अ वाइल
अलग मतलब जैसा कि आपने एक्चुअली ऑफिस आप मंडे दी जा सकते हैं और मंडे दी चालू है
कल दी
मरे हाउस ओपन है
तो मारे मरे एक को बना के तो दूर हुआ देता है उसके
यूज़ इस एज लॉन्ग एज यू गेट इट
Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari
Jaya
Radha Nandana, Braja Janadanjana, Jasoda Nandana, Braja Janadanjana, Jamuna Tira Vana Chali. Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunjabi Hari. Paramahamsa Parivijayacharya Astatara Satyasthi Srimadis Divine Grace Isi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Granthiraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Gaur Premanandi Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're continuing this morning after going to complete covering chapter 28. What's chapter 28? What's the subject matter of chapter 28? Who remembers?
Nanda Maharaj gets kidnapped by Varuna.
Right.
And the coward men see the spiritual body.
Yeah. Very good. Very good. So the lots and lots and lots of description about different features of the transcendental realm, the distinction, the similarities and distinctions between them, and the good fortune of those who are residents of Vrindavan. So, just a few remaining commentaries for chapter 28. This is from Jiva Goswami's Priti Sandarbha. Priti Sandarbha is the final of the six Sandarbhas. And it's dealing with Prayojana, the Prema Prayojana, the goal of loving perfection. And in this little section, it's a continuation of a theme that we've been hearing. There's the opulence of the Supreme Lord. You know, Bhagavan, his bhagas, his opulences, or his Aishvarya, like that term applies to Vaikuntha, the opulences of Vaikuntha, and the awe and veneration that opulence induces. And then there's this other aspect, particularly prominent in Vrindavan, is his sweetness or madhurya. And so you're touching, Jiva Goswami is touching on that topic in Priti Sandarbha. Sometimes the manifestation of the Lord's opulence increases the perception of his sweetness. I mean, there's lots that's being said that when there's this perception of opulence, it overwhelms or surpasses the sweetness. Like when Vasudeva and Devaki were released from the prison house of Kamsa, they hadn't seen, but they heard Krishna just killed Kamsa. So the two, Krishna and Balaram, were standing before them and they were, he's the Supreme Lord. And not that they didn't know that, they already knew that from his birth, past time, but now they're reunited with him so many years later and he's the Supreme Lord. And Krishna didn't want that. Krishna wanted the parental affection. So what did Krishna do? Simple, he just expanded his yogamaya potency. They forgot his divinity, and they just embraced him and Balaram, and everything was nice. So there's a sweetness. So commonly, repeatedly, the opulence feature of the Supreme Lord serves to diminish the sweetness, except if you're a resident of Vrindavan, and then you just sweetness is all the way, although he may show his divinity. So now we're going to hear about Vasudeva and Devaki have both features in their regard for Krishna. So here we go. Sometimes the manifestation of the Lord's opulence increases the perception of his sweetness. This occurs when the devotee has the idea, how can this be our son or some other relation in this wonderful situation? An example of such a situation is seen in these words of Srimad Bhagavatam, 10:28:17. That's this final verse of 28. Translation, Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men felt the greatest happiness when they saw that transcendental abode, Goloka. They were especially amazed to see Krishna himself there, surrounded by the personified Vedas who are offering him prayers. So that's like opulence. Personified Vedas are offering prayers to their Krishna, which they never saw in the Prakat Leela. And it's because of its great purity, the love of the residents of Sri Gokula, the love which the residents of Sri Gokula feel is very glorious. It is said in Srimad Bhagavatam 10:14:35, that's Brahma's prayers to Krishna after the Brahma Vimohan Leela. He just quotes the first few verses, words of the Sanskrit. Esham Gosha Nivasinam Uta Bhavan. Brahma prays. My Lord, sometimes I am puzzled as to how your lordship will be able to repay in gratitude the devotional service of these residents of Vrindavan. Remember, he's in Vrindavan speaking to Krishna in Vrindavan after the pastime. Although I know that you are the supreme source of all benediction, I am puzzled to know how you'll be able to repay all the service that you're receiving from these residents of Vrindavan. I think of how you are so kind, so magnanimous, that even Putana, who came to cheat you by dressing yourself as a very affectionate mother, was awarded liberation and the actual post of a mother. And other demons belonging to the same family, such as Agasura and Bakasura, were also favored with liberation. Under the circumstances, I'm puzzled. These residents of Vrindavan have given you everything, their bodies, their minds, their love, their homes. Everything is being utilized for your purpose. So how will you be able to repay their debt? You have already given yourself to Putana. I surmise that you shall ever remain a debtor to the residents of Vrindavan, being unable to repay their loving service. So that's an example of sweetness. Although he's recognizing divinity of Krishna, there's the sweetness aspect. Okay, moving on. Another one of the Sandarbhas, Jiva Goswami from Krishna Sandarbha. From this verse, 10:28:17, the word Brahmaloka means the spiritual world of Vaikuntha, as confirmed by the words of 10:28:17, where the word Brahmaloka is clearly used to mean the spiritual world. Translation, quote, thus Krishna led all the cowherd men headed by Nanda Maharaj to the lake where Akura was later shown Brahmaloka, the Vaikuntha planetary system. They took their bath immediately and saw the real nature of Brahmaloka, that's the Vaikuntha lokas. And Jiva Goswami, again, commenting from Brahma Samhita. Jiva Goswami is quite prolific, indeed. So, text 55, that's that Sri Akanta, long verse, part of his commentary reads, inimical kings like Shishupal, Pondraka, and Shalva were always thinking about Lord Krishna. This is 11th canto, chapter 5, text 48. Even while they were lying down, sitting, or engaging in other activities, they enviously meditated upon the bodily movements of the Lord, his sporting pastimes, his loving glances upon his devotees, and other attractive features displayed by the Lord. Being thus always absorbed in Krishna, they achieved spiritual liberation in the Lord's own abode. Makes it clear it wasn't Sayuja. Shishupal, it started like that, and then because he had to he returned to Vaikuntha, his position, Jai Vijay. What then can be said of the benedictions offered to those who constantly fix their minds on Lord Krishna in a favorable, loving mood? That's translation of 11.5.48. It should be, commentary, it should be understood that those persons who spontaneously attain concentration on the Lord with a favorable mood, as mentioned in this Bhagavatam verse, obtained much more than what the demons attain. I'm going to read this sentence twice. And it should be also understood that those who constantly fix their mind on the Lord attained various forms according to the intensity of their concentration. So I'll read the sentence again and think about how you chant your japa in the morning. You ready? And it should be understood that those who constantly fix their minds on the Lord attained various forms according to the intensity of their concentration. We're preparing our next life, right? Here, the non-difference between the Lord's form in Goloka and on earth is also shown. Parentheses. Since by thinking of Krishna in his earthly pastimes, they attained Krishna and not some other form in the spiritual realm. So the non-difference. His earthly pastimes, his Goloka form, they attained that Goloka realm. Because there's a non-difference between the two. The eternal nature of Krishna's form is illustrated in the following verse. And the following verses are same. And this is the last of chapter 28. Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men felt the greatest happiness when they saw that transcendental abode. They were especially made to see Krishna himself there, surrounded by the personified Vedas who were offering him prayers. So that's the end of, the final commentary. And I'll just read this one sentence for the third time. It should be understood that those who constantly fix their minds on the Lord attained various forms according to the intensity of their concentration.
Which verse is there?
11.5.48. Now this is Jiva Goswami's commentary on Brahma Samhita. Speaking on that, you know, Shriya Kanta, Kanta Karpa Tarvo. So he's describing Goloka, and he's describing in the commentary those that attained Goloka and how do they attain Goloka. So what I'm going to do now is, I hope you don't mind, we're going to go from chapter 28 to chapter 34. And there's two reasons. Chapter 28 is Nanda gets kidnapped by the agents of Varuna. And chapter 34 is Nanda's life is again at risk by being swallowed by a serpent. So there's a nice connection between the two. And the second reason is, starting from chapters 29 through 33, is the Rasalila section, and I want to skip the Rasalila section. We'll go to something that's a little more approachable by us. So, Nanda Maharaj is saved. So here's the chapter summary from chapter 34, canto 10. This chapter describes how Lord Sri Krishna saved his father Nanda from the clutches of a serpent and delivered a Vidyadhara named Sudarshana from the curse of the Angirasa sages. One day, Nanda Maharaj and the other cowherd men placed their family members on their bullock carts and went to the Ambikavana forest to worship Lord Shiva. After bathing in the Saraswati River and worshiping Lord Sada Shiva, a form of Lord Vishnu, they decided to spend the night in the forest. As they slept, a hungry serpent came and began to swallow Nanda Maharaj. Terrified, Nanda cried out in distress, "Oh, Krishna!" If you're Vrijvasi, that's what you do. "Oh, my son, please save the surrendered soul." The cowherd men immediately woke and began beating the serpent with wooden torches, but the serpent would not release Nanda. Then Lord Krishna came and touched the serpent with his lotus foot. The serpent was immediately freed from the reptilian body and appeared in his original form as a demigod. He told them about his previous identity and described how he had been cursed by a group of sages. Then he offered his homage to the lotus feet of Sri Krishna and, on the Lord's order, returned to his own abode. Paragraph. Same chapter. Later, during the Dola Purnima festival, Sri Krishna and Baladev enjoyed pastimes in the forest with the young women of Raja. The girlfriends of Baladev and those of Krishna joined together and sang about their transcendental qualities. When the two lords became absorbed in singing to the point of apparent intoxication, a servant of Kavera's named Shankachuda boldly came forward and began abducting the gopis. The young girls called out, "Krishna, please save us." And he and Rama began to chase after Shankachuda. "Don't be afraid," Krishna called out to the gopis. In fear of the lords, Shankachuda left the gopis aside and ran for his life. Krishna chased after him and, swiftly approaching him, with a blow of his fist, removed Shankachuda's jewel together with his head. Then Krishna brought the jewel back and presented it to Lord Baladev. And they all lived happily ever after. So text one, that's all we're going to be discussing this morning. Sri Shuka Uvacha. Shukadev Goswami said, one day, the cowherd men, eager to take a trip to worship Lord Shiva, traveled by bullock carts to Ambika forest. Purport. According to Srila Jiva Goswami, the word Ekada here indicates the occasion of Shivaratri. He further mentions that Ambika Vana is in Gujarat province near the city of Siddhapura. That's a long journey. Mm-hmm. We'll hear some otherwise. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds that the departure of the cowherd men specifically took place on the 14th lunar day of the dark fortnight of the month of Phalgun. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also quotes authorities who claim that Ambika Vana lies on the bank of the Saraswati River, northwest of Mathura. Ambika Vana is notable because within it are deities of Sri Shiva and his wife, Goddess Uma, thus Ambika Vana. And those of you that have been to Vrindavan, you know that one of the places we visit during Govardhan Parikrama is the place where it is said that's where this pastime took place. So take your pick. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentary. This is not really extensive this morning. The 34th chapter describes how Krishna delivered his father from being swallowed by a snake, killing Shankachuda, the son of Kuvera, and taking his crown jewel. After describing the autumn Rasalila, and before describing the holy Lila of spring, so that's a big span, Shukadev describes the celebration of Shivaratri. On the Chaturdasi, or waning phase of the Phalgun month, the inhabitants of Braja went to Ambikavana, a forest with Shiva and Uma deities on the bank of the river Saraswati to the northwest of Mathura. Others, however, say that the place was located at Siddhapura in Gujarat. Do you know where that place is?
I know Siddhapura. I don't know the forest. Siddhapura, I went a couple of times.
Okay.
Forest, I have no idea.
Long distance, right?
No, not too long.
From Vrindavan? Vrindavan to Siddhapura. By bullock carts and all the family members. Yeah. And who knows what the roads were like.
1,000 plus kilometers.
Okay. Jiva Goswami. To show a similar pastime related to the same subject as the Rasa dance, in which ends with the killing of Shankachuda, Shukadev now relates another pastime which shows Krishna's power used to prevent opposing persons from interfering with such pastimes. This pastime is going to Ambikavana. This pastime of going to Ambikavana chronologically comes between Rasalila and Horika pastimes, or the holy pastime. It's now referred to in different ways, three different ways. But we're in ISKCON, we know what the holy festival is. Even in the West, right? The Western kids get together and throw, that one. Paragraph. After the Rasa dance, Ekada, that's one day, during Shivratri, in Phalgun month, the cowherds, Gopala, became eager to go on pilgrimage to a Shiva temple. One should understand that it was ultimately because of Krishna's eagerness, as in the Govardhan pastime. Everything is resting on Krishna's desires. So they went. They were fully devoted to his desires. They developed complete eagerness. A jata kautuka. Complete eagerness. Because of the cowherd Krishna, Gopal. Krishna had a hidden agenda of easily associating with the gopis at this time. He had similar feelings as in the previous pastime of Rasalila. They used oxen, which could easily pull the carts. They used carts to bring many articles for gifting at the holy place. Thus they traveled conspicuously. Ambikavana was northwest of Mathura district on the bank of the Saraswati River with Shiva and Durga as the presiding deities. Or it was a holy place not far from Siddhapura in Gujarat province. They went because it was very famous. So we have some options where they went. Sanatana Goswami, and this is it, two paragraphs, and we're finished for this morning. Shukadev begins a related story to show the increase of bhakti for the Lord in the cowherds by showing them directly his power. He describes another similar pastime where human pastimes were mixed with power. Paragraph. It was during his Kaishora period, which some say was Shivaratri, the Palgun month, and some say it was during Kartik. The cowherds became eager to go visit Shiva. They went out of curiosity or out of fun, not because of material desires, since they were cowherds whose quality was having fun. They yoked huge bulls to their carts, since cowherds normally travel by cart, and they had to carry many goods for offering to the Tirtha. They went gloriously, the other was conspicuously. Ambikavana was northwest of Mathura district on the bank of the Saraswati River with Shiva and Durga as the presiding deities, or it was a holy place not far from Siddhapura in Gujarat province. And that's it for commentaries. The Shruti mantra says, Rasovai Saha, which means Saha is a pronoun, that, and so it's that, Saha or Tat, indicates the absolute truth. Whatever the absolute truth is, the absolute truth, Vai, certainly, is Rasa. So Krishna is Rasa. And commonly, we're accustomed to hearing about rasa in terms of what the living entities experience, in particular rasa with Krishna. But it's actually the other way around. Krishna is rasa, and living entities have a relationship with Krishna to fulfill his rasa propensity, and he... Rasa propensity is without limit. And so there's so many living entities that have a relationship, a particular rasa with Krishna, fulfilling his desire. in different ways. So his pastimes, a Krishna-centric picture of his pastimes is Krishna fulfilling his desires. And living entities are going along for the ride. That is, according to his indication, that's, you know, particularly the residents of Vrindavan, then the sweetness of Krishna and Krishna's exchanges with his sweet-hearted devotees is to stir or stimulate their ecstatic love for him. And his happiness is their happiness, and their happiness is his happiness. And that's Vrindavan, that's the nature of transcendence. And so the variety is has no boundaries. And as pastimes flow, it very seamlessly flows from one thing to the next thing, to the next thing, to the next thing. Like, you know, there's so many likes. Like Krishna entering Mathura and how he deals with the different personalities that he meets as he and the cowherd boys are entering Mathura. And it's essentially, it doesn't say this explicitly, but it's like deity worship. First he takes his bath. Then he gets garments. Then he gets ornaments and fragrances and sandalwood pulp and scented oil and garlands. It's deity worship. But there's different persons who he encounters. Without naming them all, but, you know, one after the next. And some are delightful devotees, and he reciprocates with the delightful devotees in a certain way. You know, then some are inimical. The washerman was inimical. And he got liberation. Kubja was lusty. And Krishna accepted her love and elevated the quality of her love and reciprocated with her in the way that he did. And then there's Sudama the florist. And he reciprocated with Sudama the way that he did. He granted to Sudama, he didn't say this to any of the others, but because of the quality of the love of Sudama, he said, "You please me very much by your devotion. And you may ask for me whatever you like." It was very clever. He asked for three things. He asked for eternal service. Then he asked for association with the devotees so he could hear and discuss topics about Krishna in the association of devotees. And he asked for a favorable attitude towards everyone else, to all living entities. There's quite a package. Now that was his heart. Not that Krishna didn't know his heart, but the Leela is he asked him. And so be it. And then he goes on, approaches the city, and then there's the exchanges with those that see him approaching the city. And the young gopis, the young girls of Braja, the elders, the men, the brahmana that worships him. It's a festival of moving from one thing to the next thing. And it was a bow festival. So he went and just grabbed the bow and broke the bow. And, you know, there was a tussle, and Krishna finished that tussle. And so then he went back to take rest with his friends. And the next morning he goes and gets ready to enter. And Kamsa's got the Kuvalya Pita ready, and he does the Kuvalya Pita program. And just like smacks him and punches him and throws him to the ground and breaks off his tusks and smashes him with the tusks, and he's dead. Yay, Krishna finished. Then he, with the bloody tusks over his shoulder and Balaram's shoulder, they go striding into the wrestling arena. And there's a celebrated verse. I'm sure you're aware of it. Some people, it's one of those celebrated verses that people recite on a regular basis, but there's 12 different persons mentioned, categories of persons that see Krishna in different ways. And according to how you have regard for Krishna, that's how you're going to see Krishna. It starts with the wrestler saw him as a thunderbolt. And so forth. The yogi saw him as Paramama walking across the wrestling mat. That must have been interesting. And, you know, the elders saw him as their beloved boy, and so forth and so on. According to, so Krishna reveals himself according to the regard. Now, going back to what we heard earlier, and according to the intensity of that feeling, one will attain whatever one is going to attain after this life. And then, you know, the wrestling, and then killing Kamsa, and everyone's not so sure. He just, like, maybe got knocked out, but he's not dead. So Krishna drags him. And he moves up. You know, he just goes on seamlessly. He goes over to Vasudeva and Devaki, and they're, and he covers them with his yoga maya. So it's just one loving exchange after the next loving exchange. And it looks like, gosh, you know, he killed this elephant, and he, wrestlers, and that wasn't just the two, it was that the brothers of the wrestlers, and they took care of them too, and Kamsa, then his mother. So, like, worldly people don't understand this, and moralists think bad things. You know, his exchange with Kubja doesn't sound nice. And I was involved yesterday in a Zoom call with 22nd Avenue devotees. You know, 22nd Avenue is shut down like everything else, so it was a Zoom call. And there, it's a Bhagavad Gita discussion, so we were discussing chapter one, and, you know, the reasons that the Arjuna is giving for not taking part in the battle. And they sound like, you know, moral reasons, good reasons. You know, there's other explanations. So there was a new person, American lady, who was objecting. The objection went something like this. It was a little unclear exactly what she was asking, but her objection was, Krishna, you know, okay, Krishna's dismissing the selfish reasons of Arjuna why to not fight. But there was devastation as a result of the war of the people and the land. And so why was Krishna encouraging something that results in devastation? You know, the moralist picture. It's not uncommon. You know, we run across it from time to time. Some people say it, some people don't say it, but it's not uncommon. And it's not just a, you know, 1960s anti-war expression. It's just a kind of a moral perspective on decision making. You don't do something that's going to be devastating to a lot of people. So war is bad. War is bad. And agreed, war is bad. But so why was Krishna encouraging this? Aside from dismissing selfish reasons to not do it. So the transcendental purpose of Krishna appearing in this world, or, you know, it depends on how big you want to go. Why creation in the first place? because bad stuff happens, so better not to have creation. What's the purpose? When there's creation and people do bad stuff, what's the purpose of teaching them you've done bad stuff and you bet, you know, don't do bad stuff? And the consequences of doing bad stuff is real. So better not to have creation. Better not to have free will. Better to just give everybody a lobotomy and there's no free will anymore. We just have, you know, smoothies. But there's free will. Anyway. Understanding Krishna's pastimes from a with material eye or material conceptions of values and right and wrong and all those things, it doesn't fit. So how to move from the material lens to the transcendental lens? Well, it takes some faith, and it takes hearing from proper sources, and not just nodding your head yes and your heart says no, but adjusting your heart so you can say yes with your heart and then accept that the all-merciful Krishna is all-merciful, even when he does what looks like bad stuff or doesn't fit our sensibilities. He's reciprocating. And there's different verses from scripture we're reading, many different verses that say the same thing as that verse. All living entities, as they prapadyante, as they take shelter of me or have regard for me, I reciprocate. And he reciprocates in a very special way with his devotees because of their devotion. And it's just part of reciprocation according to their regard for him. It's not partiality, although it looks like partiality. It certainly looks like partiality. But it's loving exchanges because raso vaisaha. And in the midst of the rasa, there's in the Boma Leela or the worldly manifest pastimes, there's obstacles. Hey, there's obstacles. There's obstacles in our life and there's obstacles in Krishna's pastimes. And the devotee turns to Krishna. I mean, we do practical things as well. The cowherd men, they picked up sticks that were burning in the fire and they were smashing the snake. They didn't just like, Krishna, take care of our problems. They did what they could do, but it wasn't being effective. So we do what we can do. We make efforts, and our efforts with Krishna's sanction may work out just fine. With Krishna's sanction, and they may not. And then what do? The taking shelter of Krishna is the force that's when you're making effort and the force after you make effort. We're dependent upon Krishna's mercy. So Krishna shows his mercy. We heard. Effortlessly put his foot on the head of the serpent, and voila, problem solved. Must have been a big serpent. He was swallowing Nanda Maharaj. Big guy. Better watch out when you go to Ambikavana to have a yatra. Maybe you get just run into that guy. Or one of his children or something like that. So it sounds like fairy tales, I just, there's a little explanation. The other day, do you know the devotee from Chicago, you know, around your age, Giridhari? You don't know him, but he knows him. He's now living in Australia at their farm. Not only it's coronavirus, you know, hunkering down, but he thinks that's a suitable place for him. So he wrote an article for their publication, the farm's publication. And he did some research, and he was describing what it was like when he became a new devotee, and people didn't understand about life of devotion, so they were saying bad stuff about his participating in a life of devotion. So the research that he did in this and presented in the article included, you know, the Western perspective of, you know, Indian mysticism or Vedic literature. And one of the references he made was to Lord Macaulay. That what I sent him some information that wasn't in the article, but goes back to before the British colonization of India. The British Parliament sent Lord Macaulay from the Parliament, the House of Lords, to go to India and check it out, see what's the best way to colonize India. And he wrote made a public speech before the Parliament, I forget the year. And the speech said, my travels throughout length and breadth of India, I saw, and he describes what he saw, and the only way that we're going to colonize India is to break the backbone of India. And that's their faith in their tradition, their culture, and their literature. So that's the way. And if that's broken, then we can colonize them. So what's in Giridhari's research paper, makes footnotes at the bottom where he read it, Macaulay engaged himself and engaged other people in deprecating tradition of India. You know, its practices and deity worship and, you know, you name it, everything that makes up the cultured life of Vedic practices. We make some specific quotes. So Giridhari was saying vestiges of that are still confronting the Western mindset, because people look at things through a certain lens, the material lens. And he was, you know, amplifying that material lens to the max, saying everything, you know, everything British is good and everything Indian is backwards. So trash Indian and get into Western literature, Western products, and so forth and so on. Although historically, it was just the other way around. India was the place where people would get all kinds of things, spices and so many things, products that just weren't available elsewhere, and it was regarded with esteem, what to speak of the spirituality. But the British and European effort was to counter that regard and respect. So, you know, we're Western people, some of us, and newer generation people, and those of you that have children, your children are being exposed to that way of thinking. And it's not easy, wherever you may be growing up today, to have a clear picture of the basis and support and wisdom of Vedic culture. And it's not, I mean, there's always differences. But one student just finished their freshman year in college, shared, they were shot. This was an Indian person from an Indian family. The religion in college today, their experience is, don't give me this, you know, wisdom literature stuff. Don't give me, you know, the teachings say these are values. Don't give me that stuff. Give me an experience. And if I can't experience it, you know, I'm not interested. It's the religion of subjective experience. That's the religion today. This freshman was saying, it wasn't the same for them in high school, but in college, the more intellectual people, at least, they're in pre-med, so they're mixing with those type of people. It's not easy. Not easy. So, and whatever the generation is, the lens is a mature lens, and there's different, you know, types of mature lenses. But, you know, hearing these subject matters and propagating these subject matters is primarily for the devotees. You know, Prabhupada was very bold. He took the 10th canto, turned it into Krishna book, and had us distribute it widely. I recall very clearly the challenge we felt when this big, you've seen the original publication of Krishna book. It was big pages because there were lots of paintings. And Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, with a big picture of Krishna on the front. And, you know, we had van loads full of Krishna books, and that's the book that we had to distribute for, like, you know, a year. Very bold. Prabhupada was so bold. And how are people going to understand it? I mean, a common experience that I had when distributing those books is people would look at the picture, they say, oh, that's really nice. Who's that? I say, that's God. They go, no. Yes. Why not? Well, he can't look like that. Why he can't look like that? Well, he can't look like that. That's why he can't look like that. Anyway, it's uphill. So if we get it, we have, and to extend the opportunity for others to receive devotee association, then it becomes possible. And, you know, people have their doubts, like this lady that was saying, you know, why war? You know, if you have the devotee association, maybe you can get on the other side of that material lens. And how do you look at things with a spiritual lens? Well, you need devotee association. We need the scriptures, and we need devotee association. And it's not just, you know, young Western people, it's Indian people too. Big time. Because they bought into the paradigm. Big time. Big time. Okay. I'm glad you fixed the clock. It tells the actual time now. So let's see if there's some discussion. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
Hare Krishna.
Maharaj, I'm a little confused. So help me here. You made a statement, maybe I misunderstood the statement. You said even Krishna had an obstacle in expressing his...
No, that's not what I said.
Oh, okay.
That's not what I said. I said that even you're in the spiritual world, there's obstacles in the spiritual world.
Okay. Okay.
But it's designed by design.
Okay.
Krishna, then Krishna take care of the obstacle.
Okay.
Okay. Yes.
So these words you mentioned 11:548, the part that you read, was it from the purport or is it from the other commentaries?
It's from commentary. Jiva Goswami is commenting on that verse in a particular way. Anything else? Or online? Anything?
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, okay, Kubera.
Just a comment. The Ambika one we are talking about, that is near Siddhapur.
That is actually north of Gujarat, and we remember that we visit the Bindu Sarovar in the Dwarka Yatra.
Yeah.
That is not too far from that. So it's all in the south of the Mathura. So I was wondering why they are mentioning again in the northwest of the Mathura. Is that maybe referring to the Ambikavan in the Govardhan in the area?
I only know what I read.
Yeah.
I can't answer your question. I'll guess. There is such a place that they're describing, because otherwise they wouldn't describe it.
Right.
So there may be multiple Ambikavanas.
That's
okay? Just like, you know, on Govardhan Parikrama, it is said that's where that pastime took place.
Right.
And there may be, you know, just like Vidya, you know, Vidyadhar, or so many places. You remember when we went to Dwarka Yatra, we went to a place that there was a cave that said that's where.
What's up with that cave?
So, I mean, it's not even in the right state.
That's right.
You know, the people want tourism. And so they'll say anything because bakshish. Okay. Online.
Yeah, we have a couple questions. First one is from Sanda Mataji. Sanda Mataji.
Okay.
What is the difference between Prakat Leela and Aprakat Leela that you explained yesterday?
Simple. When Krishna performs his pastimes in this world, it's called Prakat, or manifest. And there's eternal Leela that is not manifest to the world, and that's Aprakat. And those are eternal pastimes going on. That's it.
Next one is from Uttama Bhakta Prabhu.
Mm.
He has 4 questions.
Oh.
Looking at the Putana pastime, it looks like even a slight introduction to the Lord's personal form is highly merciful and amazing. I don't know if that's a question or a comment.
It's a comment. But it's not like everyone who saw him only once got the same result. He just chose to give special mercy to Putana for reasons you have to ask him about. Go ahead.
Question number 2. To understand Vaikuntha, Ayodhya, Dwaraka, and Gokula love means perfect, more perfect, and most perfect love?
Well, that's what we read. And then there's the criterion for making that kind of evaluation. Go ahead.
Question number 3. How difficult is it to love Krishna?
Well, ask your wife. It's easy and it's difficult at the same time. It's easy because it's totally natural, and it's difficult because we're attached to the unnatural. We're conditioned by the illusory energy, and we're clinging to it. Therefore, it's difficult. But it's not difficult. It's very easy because it's natural.
And his 4th question: I am favorable to all living entities. I have love and respect for animals, birds, etc. But I struggle with insects and snakes. Don't know why. Any thoughts?
Excuse me. The only comment I have is that which gives us pain, like insects, not all insects give us pain, but some bite and sting and do things. So we don't like pain, and so we're pain-averse people, want to stay away from pain. And if something is an instrument that brings pain, then we have some feelings. And it's natural. That's like defending from that which causes pain. But snakes, so, you know, fortunately, the way that we live our lives today, in the West at least, we don't have so much botheration with insects because we live this, whatever you want to call it, kind of a life. You know, there's insects outdoors, but we're indoors and so forth. So we're protected from that which is may invoke fear or discomfort, at least, or aversion. So that it's minimized. I'm just commenting that fear is something that's, or aversion is minimized just by how we live our lives today. But snakes, even, I recall growing up, and you know, it's just very common. Somebody sees a little garden snake, and they're not poisonous, but everyone goes, "Oh, snake!" and jumps up on a chair or something. Although they're harmless, they can't hurt you. They cannot hurt you. In fact, they help. They eat the insects. but ones with poison, then, according to Prahlad Maharaj, even sadhus are joyful when the scorpion or the poisonous serpent is killed. So you can worry about the poisonous ones and be happy with the non-poisonous ones.
We have three more, not from Prabhu, from other people.
Okay.
First one is from Vishalaksha Prabhu.
Okay.
How to see and go on with so-called obstacles as the mercy of Sri Guru and Krishna?
How to go on when we're facing obstacles?
Yes. So-called obstacles.
So-called obstacles. Well, reality and illusion factors. Obstacles are the real obstacles are within, and the real obstacles are the ones that are out are just opportunities for service. And that's how to see the obstacles without. So there's some service opportunity, and the obstacles within, they're far more insidious and detrimental. At the same time, you have some medicine for those internal obstacles, and that's hearing and chanting, and then the services that follow that hearing and chanting according to the instructions of what we've heard and chanted. And then that's our protection. So that's the shelter that you're looking for that can help you deal with so-called obstacles.
Next one is from Archana Vaidya. Is preaching a adhikar of all aspiring devotees? Should one try, even if not explicitly ordered by spiritual authority?
Well, we are specifically ordered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that so the order is on us all. And it's not qualification. It's adhikar terminology commonly means, you know, your psychophysical nature. And if you have your psychophysical nature, then you have the qualification for whatever it is. And it's a spiritual dimension or aspect of a soul to be in relationship with Krishna. So when you're in relationship with Krishna, then there's others that are more or less in relation in their understanding of their relationship with Krishna. So one to be in relationship with Krishna is quite natural to extend Krishna thought to others. That's what preaching is. Reminding others of Krishna, what they may be remembering, or reminding others of what they have forgotten. So it's a natural function of the soul.
Next one is from Swetadeep Prabhu. Can you please share what response you gave to the question on the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita?
The answer I gave was misunderstood. But the answer I gave was, the big picture is Krishna was liberating souls. And so because Krishna by nature is kind, it may look like the aftermath of war was devastation. But actually what Krishna was doing was two things. He was protecting those who are abiding by laws of nature and laws of God. And he was liberating those that don't. So one might say he was being more kind to those that he liberated than those that he didn't. But he was just reciprocating, giving protection. So then it was misunderstood by saying, the coronavirus, it's also Krishna's liberation program. They extended it to that. Because it looked like devastation. But, you know, are we supposed to see Krishna's liberating people? So anyway, that was misunderstood. Okay.
One more from Radha Vallabh Prabhu.
Okay.
As one constantly meditates on Krishna, varied loving reciprocations to devotees, including putana, etc., does one become qualified to see loving reciprocations in one's own life?
Yeah. Well done. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki. Yeah.